Welcome back to another episode of From the Field. I'm Will Haverkamp.
And I'm Joe Jurisic.
You know, in the green industry, amongst many others, labor and staffing is a hot topic for everybody. So more and more companies are digging into H2A as well as H2B programs to help fill their bench and just to get the work done and stay consistent with their business operations. So just understanding the programs as well as who to go to for the right support can be challenging for a lot of people. So today's guest is Kyle Farmer from Farmer Law PC. His firm specializes in helping businesses navigate and also fully execute the H2B and H2A process. So Kyle, it's great to have you on today. Welcome to From the Field.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I appreciate the intro and I appreciate the chance to be on with you guys. It's really looking forward to the conversation.
Awesome. So Kyle, you are the one of the owners of Farmer Law PC, correct?
That's right. Yeah, me and my wife, we started our firm in 2016, which is when we graduated from law school. We went to Vanderbilt, and after that, we moved up to Iowa, where we were helping a family construction company file a bunch of H2A visas. And then from there, it kind of evolved into H2A. Then they knew people that needed H2B help, and then other people started asking for H2A help. So this is right up our alley. H2A and H2B is what we do all day, every day.
Perfect. So for some folks that might have, they've never been really introduced to it, there's a lot of folks that are very familiar with it. Could you provide just some cliff notes on both programs and how would a landscape contractor or supplier qualify for something like this?
Yeah, of course. So the H2A and H2B programs they're kind of sister programs. One of them, H2A, is specifically for agricultural employers, people that are engaged in agricultural labor or services, whereas H2B are those that are not engaged in agricultural labor or services. But they both have some of the same requirements. You know, what you normally see in H2A and H2B is an employer demonstrating some fluctuation in their workload throughout the year. Primarily with landscapers, what you see is, like April through December, where the work picks up and it drops off over the wintertime. H2A, a lot of times you're going to see people that are actually engaged in the growing of a crop, as opposed to just the like a contractor, getting sod and laying sod for people. But sometimes you have people that are engaged in both. And then the nice thing is that they fall under H2A. One of the big differentiators between the two programs is that the H2B program has a numerical cap that is super competitive. H2A has no numerical cap. So where you can, you want to fit in H2A, even though there are some additional requirements in H2A that aren't applicable in H2B. The fact you're not competing for a cap makes it a lot more usable of a program.
Gotcha. And I understand that that cap has been extended this year, correct?
The way that they do, they do what's called a cap increase every year. So there's 66,000 visas under the H2B program that were allocated by Congress whenever they first issued or whenever they first approved the program. And so the way that's broken down is 33,000 for the first half of the government's fiscal year, which starts on October 1st, 33,000 for April 1st, which is the second half of the government's fiscal year. And almost every year they do this, which is what's called a cap increase. So Congress will get together and say, hey, Department of Homeland Security, you're given the authority to issue this many additional visas this year. And that's happened every year that I've been doing this, except for in 2020. They didn't with COVID. I think that probably would have left a bad taste in people's mouth to have 20% unemployment and then doing a cap increase for H2B. But so they didn't do it then. But yeah, so this is something they do every year. It's just that they issued a lot of visas, or not a lot of visas. They gave the authority to the Department of Homeland Security to issue a lot more visas preemptively, which is certainly nice.
For the H2B program, I know, and I think H2A, correct me if I'm wrong, you can get the same folks year after year after year. With H2B, yep. Is that the same? And then also your participation, because a lot of contractors say, hey, how do I get into that cap? It is like, how does the, divvying out of the workers, how does that work? Is that based on age, like need, how many years you've been doing it? That's a common question that I get. Like, how do I get in a spot when folks have been doing this already for 20 something years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it, let's focus. I'm going to focus on like the April cap because that's the one that most people are going to be thinking about. Sure. So the way that that works is every employer that's filing a cap subject petition, meaning they're applying for those visas that are available on April 1st, all of them should apply between January 1st and January 3rd. And that's whenever they're submitting their job order to the state workforce agency, their application to the Department of Homeland Security and all the, I mean, to the Department of Labor and all the substantiating evidence. What the Department of Labor does at this point is they take all those applications and they randomly assign them groups. Last year was groups A through G. And so to the Department of Labor, it wasn't relevant whether you've been doing this for 20 years or if you just got into the program to begin with. You need to get assigned group A. Otherwise, you're basically not getting your workers. They assign, there's 33,000 visas available. They assign 35,000 beneficiaries into group A. So group A hogs all the visas. Yeah. Now, where it really matters if you've participated previously in the H-2B program is with exactly what we were talking about a minute ago, which was the cap increase. Because the cap increase, although you might not get your people until May or June, whenever they actually start issuing those visas, one of the requirements is that the workers that are returning are either returning workers, meaning they've been issued an H-2B visa in the prior 3 years, or they're from one of the Northern Triangle countries, which are Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And so one of the big benefits that people have that have a history of filing with the Department of Labor is they know the workers that they want to bring in. These guys are already trained and they will be a beneficiary of a cap increase. Whereas newcomers, they don't have that unless they have someone that can help them find people that fall within that definition. So that's where it matters a lot. But from the initial filing phase, it doesn't matter. It's completely random. It doesn't matter if you're applying for 1,000 people or one person. It doesn't matter if you've been doing this for 20 years. If this is your first year, it's completely random.
Is there a chance too in the H-2B program for you to get non, like, you know, me being owning a landscape company, right? We're doing the, you know, mowing, maybe some install stuff like that. Am I going to get a guy that was hanging drywall or anything of that? Or is it all or do they like classify within the H-2B program different skill sets?
They don't do that, but that is one of your obligations as an employer. Let's say that you own a landscaping company where you're mowing, you're weed eating, you're laying sod, and on your application, you're requiring 3 months of experience landscaping. Well, the person that you bring in needs to meet the same experience requirement as that you're requiring of the U.S. worker. And so that's a really important part about working with someone that you trust to recruit for you, because if your recruiter can find, your recruiter needs to be able to find people that meet your experience requirements. But the government themselves do not classify people based off of their occupation.
Okay. That's good.
Nice.
That's a good question.
So you've kind of helped us define this a little bit here. As far as your business, like it sounds like you started a little bit more on the construction end. Tell us how you got into the green industry itself. Was that more like a referral, or how did you get started?
Yeah, man, our first landscaping company, it was a referral. It was a family member of a construction company owner. And so, and the construction company was filing H-2B visas and the landscape, and he was like, hey, my cousin has this landscaping company. He needs guys too. And so we started filing for him. But then landscapers are also one of the most common users of the H-2B program. I mean, you're looking at seafood processing, landscapers, and hospitality industry are the three most common uses of the H-2B program. And so if you get deep in H-2B, you're going to naturally happen upon landscapers. But yeah, our first one was a referral, and that was the way that we got our feet wet from it. But then it's grown a lot from there. Now we've got a lot of landscape companies that we help out.
I can only imagine. I mean, there's how many landscape companies do they say are out there, Joey? Like 500,000.
Is there that many? I mean, it's a ton. And it's funny, man, because you got companies that are just a guy and his mower, And then you've got companies that have 1,200, 1,500 employees. I mean, it's one of those industries where you can be big and you can be small, and you can have a good business either way. It's pretty cool.
So, all right. So let's say I'm a contractor. I find you guys, what's kind of the process? Where are you going to be helpful for me as a contractor, as far as just going through the process, the diligence? Why would I want to use Farmer Law PC to help me out with my H2B process?
Yeah, I'm going to answer the first part first. Like, what do? We do all of it. So we do the actual preparation of an application. We'll evaluate your case to make sure that you're able to qualify under H2B before you ever file to begin with.
Right.
And then we'll walk you through the whole application and make sure that you're doing it consistent with the regulations. And then if you need workers, if you're trying to find people, we also have another company called AW Labor that can help you recruit, and will actually process the workers for you. The nice thing for me, we started this firm out of law school, and it was a consequence of not being able to find another job. I was applying all over the place, and I was like, which I transferred from Baylor Law School to Vanderbilt specifically so I could be like, hey, I'm going to a really good law school. Please make me employable.
Yeah.
That did not work out.
Wow.
It sucked. So I left law school, and I probably applied like 80 jobs, and they were all like, no. But now that's one of the biggest blessings that I have, because I didn't ever develop a lawyer mentality in terms of the snootiness or the ego. We don't have that. Our whole firm grew on the basis of, my clients have problems, my job's to find a solution. I don't care what the problem is. And so we do it all. We do the paperwork, the recruitment, scheduling of transportation, any kind of translation things that people need. We do all that. And it's just part of what people needed, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing, because we're able to help employers that really need employees meet with employees that really need employers. And it is a really, really cool thing.
Yeah, your timing has just been spot on. I mean, really, because Will and I were saying, give it, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I mean, you've heard of the program, but it wasn't really talked about a lot. There was that big debate back then, even on the nursery side, are you going H2A? A lot of these bigger nurseries didn't. At the time, local labor was fine. Now, fast forward, you're the hot topic. Probably people spot you out at shows and stuff. Like, how do I do this? I'm in dire need. Local market's not sufficing anymore. That's, I think, going to be the situation moving forward. So, your timing is awesome. So it's
I appreciate that. I wish it was deliberate. It wasn't. But I think that you're exactly right. And we do see it in H2A world just as much as we do in H2B world. And there's this notion that maybe right now it's because the labor market's so hot. Maybe employers should pay people more. I can tell you unequivocally, that's crap. It is not because the labor market's hot. It is not because the employers are paying people too little, because I've advertised these wage rates for way more than you think that should ever make logical sense. Mm-hmm. And nothing. And I've done it in places where the unemployment rate is really high. Guess what? U.S. applicants still aren't applying for the jobs. This is the reality. In the United States, we have a lot of jobs that Americans don't want.
Yeah.
And they won't take them. It's a culture shift. Like, we have completely shifted into this. This mentality of, I don't want that job, I'm not going to take that job. Yep. But that is one thing that's so cool about these programs, is there are people that really want these jobs, that work hard, that are dependable, that are reliable, that aren't just going to be job hopping all over the place, that are eager to come here and work. And so it's cool. It gives them a legal avenue to do that. And I think that's great.
Yeah, without it, I mean, the green industry would be hurting. I shouldn't say collapse, but it would be hard. I mean, it would be a struggle to grow and try to, you know, advance as an industry. The same work mentality is not there anymore. And it's the old guys are saying it to the younger, you know, generation stepping into roles or even starting new companies. They're saying it as well. So it's not just an old school mentality of like, well, didn't used to be how it is. Even the newer owners are saying the same thing.
That's exactly right.
And it comes up at every single discussion point where there's multiple green industry people. I was at Nursery Management Conference in Texas 2 weeks ago. They were talking about it. It is going to be top of mind moving forward. You know, there's a lot of people going, well, do I go automation route or do I join, you know, go H2A, H2B? A lot of people trying to just toss it up and figure out what's going to be the best route.
So. Yeah, that's always an interesting thing because especially like in agriculture, everyone knows that agriculture is behind technologically compared to other industries. I mean,
You say that one more time, that? Will, can you say that one more time? I think we need to repeat that and make that a headline.
Sure, I'll say it again. Everyone knows that agriculture is behind technologically from other industries. Yeah. But it makes sense because where you see technological advances is a consequence of labor costs exceeding what they should. And so what happens is labor costs go too high, and this incentivizes employers or innovators to innovate their industry to bring down labor costs. That's sure. How it always works. And so in agriculture, labor costs has historically been kind of high, but still relatively affordable. The cost of labor has not exceeded the point to require innovation in the way that other industries have. But I think that we are starting to see a shift from that because labor costs are getting extremely high, even using these programs. I mean, if you look at the year-over-year wage rate increases, it's astronomical. And I think that people greatly underappreciate this, particularly in the ag industry. Not ag employers, they get it, but the just normal people, if you walk down the street and you ask them what you think agricultural workers should be making, I guarantee they're going to say something that's not feasible. And why that is a problem is because this is a globally competitive industry. This isn't, this isn't agricultural employers just saying, hey, I want to keep this low so that I can make as much money as possible. It is, I'm a hog producer in the United States and I'm competing with hog producers in Mexico. Labor rates are way less in Mexico than they are in the United States. And I still have to outcompete them by efficiency to sell my pork to China. And so the best price is going to win. They don't care if their pork's coming from the United States or coming from Mexico, but this really matters because there is a huge national security interest in your country being able to feed itself. And so if we continue to drive labor costs up on agricultural employers like we have been, and this starts forcing agricultural production outside of the United States, this becomes a huge vulnerability for the United States as a country. And people just don't care. And they're not going to care until it hurts them. That's whenever they'll finally start caring.
So question, when you got a mix of both programs, let's say, or you have a mix of the H2A, H2B within your business, and you also have your own set of workers and folks that you're laborers, you know, as far as your internal wages, how does that affect their internal wages compared to what they have to pay to these folks that are coming in? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. So under both programs, which this is a great, great policy. Under both programs, there's a prohibition against preferential treatment of aliens. That's how it's said in the regulations. There's on both of them, I think the first regulation in both sets of regulations where it talks about the employer obligations is there's a prohibition against preferential treatment of aliens. What that means is you can't pay your H2B people more or give them incentives or any kind of bonuses that you don't give to your domestic workforce. Okay. Now you can the other way. You can pay more to your domestic workforce than you do your H2B workers, but you can't your H2B workers or your H2A workers than you do your domestic workforce. And this is something that people accidentally fall into all the time, and they don't do it on purpose. You know, they're not doing it. They're just trying to take care of their people. And they're like, man, these guys have been coming over here for the last 3 years. They're kicking butt. I appreciate their loyalty. I'm going to pay them an extra dollar an hour. I'm not going to pay my U.S. workers that extra dollar an hour because they've only been here for a year. And then Department of Labor comes in and they'll cite them for it. So it's a big deal. You want to make sure that you don't do that. But yeah, that is something to be aware of.
And you still have to post for local labor, correct? You can't completely close it off. You still have to, if someone walks in the door, you still have to take an application and that, because that, I know a lot of people ask that question too, like, how do I handle, like, if I do get a good guy coming off the streets, how do I handle that?
Hire him, for God's sake. You're trying to employ people. So that is exactly right, though. So under both programs, H2A and H2B, you are advertising your job to the U.S. workforce, and you are required to hire any able, willing, and qualified U.S. applicants that apply for that position and want the job. And so if you say, I need 3 months of landscaping experience, and I conduct background checks prior to hiring, and I do drug screening prior to hiring, and I have a U.S. worker that walks in the door and says, I'm good with that, here's my background check, here's my drug test, here's my 3 months of experience doing landscaping, you have to hire that person. But from your standpoint, that's good. It's cheaper to hire the U.S. worker than it is the H2B worker that I have to pay for their processing and inbound transportation and all that. Now, this is also something that just drives me absolutely freaking crazy. Why in the world is there a numerical cap on the H2B program if you are required annually to test the labor market to ensure it's not adversely affecting the U.S. workforce? That makes no sense. The argument behind a cap is, I don't want to bring in so many people that it depresses the local labor market. Great. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. However, if you have to test it annually, like you do in the H2B program, and you have to prove definitively prior to getting certification from the Department of Labor that I am not adversely affecting the U.S. workforce, then what good does a cap do? The only thing that a cap is a political pawn to say, oh, we're only doing 66,000 of these a year. But what it really is an artificial constraint on the growth of businesses. It makes no sense.
I would have to agree. I mean, you're talking about a number of different things along the way here. By the way, this is great listening to you, Kyle. You're very passionate. I like it.
I love this crap.
I love it. I mean, there's very much a cultural shift within the labor force for contractors, right? It is very evident that, you know, folks within the U.S., there's certain jobs that they don't want to pick up. And I believe that this is, you know, by far one of them. You know, I think there's some fears and misnomers around, you know, what getting behind a lawnmower might look like, or if you're getting your hands dirty or whatever. It's really not that bad. Yeah. Joe and I have both done it. I actually grew up in it, you know. I guess where I'm headed with this is, it can be, I don't know. I don't see any need for a cap either. If what you're saying is correct, it's like, if there's folks that want to work and want to come over here and grab that job, then why not create that opportunity?
Exactly. I don't see why
it, yeah, it does. That doesn't make any sense to me. So
it doesn't make any sense to anyone. It is like, it's so stupid, but it is just, it's the most obvious political thing in the entire world. Wherever you can look at it and be like, that didn't make any sense. It's like half of the things that are and for three quarters of the crap that's in politics. It's like, okay, that didn't make any actual sense, but that's what it is. And it's so stupid. It's so frustrating.
Well, now, along with politics, we know there's also scams. Are there a lot of I'm careful what I say next, or you know, there's a red dot or something. If I just disappear from the screen, it was nice.
America, Joe, well. You're right. It's America.
You must be in Russia.
Maybe.
Are there a lot of, like, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but even like, you know, prime example, like, you know, Ian, there's everyone scamming each other. I mean, you know, like contractor, stuff like that. In your profession of what you do and helping people into these programs, are there like scammers that do it, because, you know, there's, I think, you know, yourself and some other folks that do this at a reputable that are good. I said, you're passionate, but, you know, sometimes people fall into the wrong hands. Like, you know, does the government, does the government double check people? Do you have to be registered? Like, is this like something we're scamming? Because I know a lot of, you know, older school folks, you know, get nervous about joining into government programs. Like, I'm going to get scammed. I'm not going to get my guys. What protections are there for someone interested in applying in the program?
This is a great question. And I'm about to ask another question about how something possibly makes sense, because it makes no sense to me. But it is important to get with someone that's reputable, because there are a ton of scams. And I can tell you about a number of them that if you just Google abuses of whichever program, you'll find plenty of them. But I mean, yeah, there's people that falsify documents on applications. There's people that this is a bad one. This is a huge pervasive problem in both H2 programs that really bites employers in the butt down the road. I'll just give you an example. Let's say that you, Joe, are an H2B employer and you're bringing in 50 guys. You're bringing in 50 guys from Mexico. You contract with this company. You don't know them. You've never heard of them. But lucky for you, Joe, they're cheap. So you're all jazzed up about it. Well, your guys all come here. Yeah, let's say they even get you through the application process. They get you your guys. And you have these guys for 3 years. These guys go home. The Department of Labor comes in and they start investigating you, as they do with these programs relatively often.
Yep.
And they start asking your workers. One of the questions they will ask your workers is, did you pay for the opportunity to come work on an H-2B visa? And if your workers say, yeah, I paid the recruiter down in Mexico $1,000, and that then the Department of Labor will say, you paid the recruiter down in Mexico $1,000? Yeah. When? Well, every year. I paid them every year that they helped me get here. Well, then the Department of Labor comes to you and says, Joe, we've heard this from your workers. Is this true? And you say, I mean, I don't have any idea about that. I didn't charge them anything. I just want guys here to work. I'm just trying to run a business here. Well, the Department of Labor for that, despite the fact that you did not know, can charge you $1,000 for every worker for every year that they're investigating you. We're at 3 years, 50 workers, that's $150,000. And they can fine you civil money penalties for each of those violations if they so choose. And so that could be a potential hundreds of thousands of dollars consequence. And so, you know, it is funny because, you know, I tell people this all the time. I am not the cheapest person that you can find to do this.
Yeah.
But what you will know is that everything that we do is honest. We only hire people with the highest integrity. We pay our people very well, to make sure that they don't feel like they need to do that kind of crap. And and you'll know when the Department of Labor comes knocking that I protected you, because yeah. I've seen it so many times where someone got a great deal on their visa processing, and then 3 years down the road, their agent runs away when the Department of Labor comes looking for them, and they're out hundreds of thousands of dollars. I see it all the time. It's wild to me that this is one area of the law, and this is the law. Make no mistake about it. This is complicated legal processes.
Yeah.
This is one area of the law where the government allows non-lawyers to perform this type of work.
Yeah, you got to be kidding me.
So avoid those guys. That being said, there are good agents. I know a few good agents that are good agents. Some of the bigger ones are actually good. But it's still riddled with corruption. It's riddled with scams. And you may even get your workers and you might still be getting worked over by your agent, who then also, by the way, can't defend you in an audit.
Man, well, I'm not going to say what I'm going to say next. Kyle,
it's pretty evident you pay for what you get, right?
Yeah.
With most anything.
That's exactly right.
So All right. So help me understand here. So this is a process where you have to refile every year, right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. You know, so what is kind of your typical fee structure and how does that work? So it sounds like you could do a full on, like you could do a consultation process to get someone started and then see if they want to jump in with you guys. Yep. Maybe there's a basic fee there. And then what does it look like for, you know, like, hey, you know what, Kyle, I love what you do. I love what you stand for. I'm a contractor and I want you to help me file every year. What is kind of an average cost look like there?
Yeah. And so the way that we do things is we do free consultations. So if anyone's looking to get involved to see if they even qualify, they can just reach out. It's totally free. And then after that, the way that it works, so we charge a certification fee, which varies somewhat based off of the industry and number of applications that they're going to be filing. Like if you're a landscaping company and you're filing 15 applications because you've got guys working all over the place in a bunch of different areas, it costs you less than it does if you're just a landscaping company filing one application, because we can actually reduce our work. And then we charge for the actual recruitment and processing of workers on flat fee basis. But it just varies so much based off the number of people that it's kind of hard to give like an average of what that looks like. But we do free consultations, and with our consultations are free quotes. So certainly doesn't hurt to reach out and see what that looks like.
Okay. And you're not like locked into a region. You could go nationwide, correct?
That's right. Yeah. No, I think last time I counted, we had clients in at least 26 states, but that was at least a year ago. I don't even know. I think it's hard to think of too many states where we haven't done filings. But yeah, so no, we're all over the place. This is that's one great thing is it's federal law. And so your license in any state, you can do federal law. So it's a good one.
Do certain states have in their hands on any of it, even though it's federal? Oh man, it's Monday. It's government federally regulated. There we go. On the second try.
So they, the states do have their own part of it. So okay. Especially with the H2A program, for example. Yeah. The states do they have a housing inspection requirement. And so the state requirements kind of vary by state, not too much because they're all pretty consistent with OSHA standards, but just procedurally, it can be a little bit different and it can be a little procedurally different based off of, the state for H2B as well. Like how do you submit your job order? How do you check for, applicants that have applied for the position, those sorts of things. So it varies, but yeah, no, we've done it so much that none of the states scare us.
That's good. I got a question. I'm a you know, fourth generation nursery owner. I've been doing local labor for forever. I sit down with you and have a beer. What's the selling point of joining the program? What's, you know, what is it? I mean, because that was the common core question. Why should I do this?
Yeah, that's what the beer was for. The beer was the selling point. No, yeah. This is the reality is at this point where we are in the United States, what employers need are consistent, reliable labor. That's it. They're not looking for anything fancy. All they want is that person that wants to come to work every morning, that'll put in the hours that you need them to, and that will be more than happy to come back the following season for you. And the thing is people are willing to pay more for that because there are costs associated with it. There are filing costs. There's attorney's fees. There's embassy fees. There's transportation costs. If you're a nursery and running H2A guys, there's housing costs. There's potential meals and transportation. Yep. A ton of costs. But why are people willing to do it? Well, you gain a tremendous amount of efficiency by having the same person or people come back year after year. You gain a lot of cost from not having to constantly replace people or advertise on Indeed or LinkedIn, which can be extremely expensive. And so it's a really good way to be able to predict your costs and then grow your business based off of the predictability of your costs, which you can't do with unpredictable labor.
Yeah.
Is there
consistency, Joey? I mean, it's the thing we always talk about, consistency, right? I mean, H2A personally sounds like a much easier program, or maybe less pitfalls. than H2E. Yeah.
That's right.
So my question, one of the ones that I was thinking of is, what can you offer a guy that's a contractor, any type of guarantees at all with your services for, you know, I know it's always a worry. I've watched some of these guys, you know, sit and actually get, you know, lose sleep at night about whether or not they're going to get their workers, right? And I've even heard from some of these contractors that have lost huge contracts because they don't have the labor to complete them. Also delays on when the guys actually show up and when they get there. You know, it's like, oh, they were going to be here at the beginning of spring and now they're not going to be here till the end of summer. You know, is there
any
peace of mind that you could offer a guy coming through in that arena from your guys' service?
Yeah. And, you know, with H2A, that's a lot easier to do than it is with H2B. You know, and anytime that I have had an H2A case denied by the Department of Labor, I have appealed it, and I've appealed it with a lot of success in getting the denials overturned. Usually the Department of Labor is pretty reasonable with that, and I haven't charged people for it. And then with H2B, if an application's been denied, I've refiled without charging people as well. Okay. The appeal process is not quite as user-friendly with H2B as it is H2A, but yeah, so we help people out with that. And then with H2A, it's pretty easy for me to tell you when your people are going to be there. With H2B, it's not necessarily that easy, but I can tell you that the partner that you have in this program, you want them to care as much as you care. You want them to lose sleep when you're losing sleep, and we do. Like, we really, really care about this stuff.
Cool. Joey, you had a question. You had it on the tip of your tongue. I know I stepped in there.
No, you're good. I think, is there, like, when you're in your consultation with folks, do you, because there are associated increase in cost, do you have, like, a factor you tell people when they're trying to, like, work this into their budget? Because, you know, that's a big part of it. How do I do my pricing? How do I plan for, if I'm going to join this program, is there a simple, like, oh, just take it times 1.5 or something like that? Do you have generalized kind of, like, I should say markup, but like factors that a business owner can put into their calculations?
So that's a great question. That the way that I actually built out my pricing is I have a calculator that I use that I built out in Excel. It was like the best morning of my life because I got to play in Excel for like 4 hours. If you give me a chance to play in Microsoft Excel for 4 hours, I'm all in. And I did it exactly how I would have done it if I were a landscaping company, for example. I took the overall cost, and then I took the anticipated number of hours that each worker would work over the course of a year and figured out what the cost per hour it's going to take me to actually participate in this program. And that's been the best way for people, is because they can look at it. I put in all the costs, and I inflated the costs a little bit just so if people are coming in, they're coming in under budget. But yeah, I do it on a per hour basis because that's how everyone bids work. So I did exactly that.
Fantastic. That's great to hear, because that can be a little difficult, trying to, you know, instead of just throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks, having some concrete numbers really helps in that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I got to play in Excel, you know, it's win-win.
You got any cheat codes for us?
Control Alt Delete. That's
that's great.
Undo quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Don't save.
Yeah.
Kyle, what are just curious, you know, like what are some of the biggest challenges that you guys face within your business?
Within our business, you know, one thing that we've done, and I think that this is very relatable to people, is we've hired preemptively for work that we assume is going to be there. And so we've grown a lot. I mean, I think 3 years ago, I had three or four employees. Now I've got over 80, and we've just grown like that because we've consistently tried to stay ahead of growth through hiring and training. And so that's a hard thing, though. Hiring and training consistent with the mentality that you bring to your original core focus is tough. It's kind of tough to grow like that. But we try to weed out a lot of people through the interview process that we don't think can fit our core values or our mission. And then we hired people like Drew to help training more efficient. And so she's done a great job with that. So, but I would say that's probably the hardest thing is standardizing these processes and making sure that it's consistent with what you expect.
Cool. Well, I know that, that the green industry, you know, even since we talked about, just the amount of contractors and growers and folks that are, involved in our industry, there's a tremendous opportunity, I think, as far as for your company and the services that you provide, you know, specifically within the green industry. So, you know, how are you looking to, I guess, say grow with us? Because I kind of feel like we represent, you know, our group. I know there's like the NALP, which is out there that does Elevate. Is there any other green industry groups that you guys involved in? And, you know, how targeted are you at actually working with this industry? Just curious.
Yeah, we're involved in a bunch of different industries. I actually don't have all, I mean, a bunch of different associations and groups. I don't actually have them all in front of me, but I think that we have like 15 or 20 that we're a part of. And we're pretty actively involved in all of them. You know, I think that one of the most helpful things that we can do for people is to educate people on how to properly use these programs, but then also educate the public on the importance of them, because that's one of the huge disconnects is that the public doesn't appreciate even other lawyers. I know very few other lawyers that actually file these types of applications because they're a pain in the butt compared to other types of immigration applications.
Sure.
But with that, there's a cost of people don't care. And so the way that we're trying to help with this industry and grow with this industry is through advocacy, is through education and just hoping that we can really make a difference for everyone.
Very cool. I mean, you have some of the, I would like to say our industry is full of salt of the earth type of folks. You know, just some really good, solid people, great character. And, you know, you got a bunch of people that care about the earth, whether they're stewards of the environment. And like you hit the nail on the head earlier, you know, talking about people that just want consistency and they want to be able to focus on their business versus having to sweat, filling seats to make sure the work gets done. Right. So,
yeah.
So I appreciate that. And I hope that, you know, our thing was to kind of highlight your guys' story, you know, what you guys do, talk about the H2B program, the H2A programs. And I didn't want it to be like a sales pitch, really. You know, it's more of like, hey, there's some people that are advocates for you out there. It's about, like you said, educating yourself and understanding what the programs are all about and finding someone to partner with that can help you through it and make it work. And it, like you say, get the help and the consistent things you need to run your business, right?
Yeah. No, and the thing that you said a second ago, I think is exactly right about this industry being the salt of the earth. That's actually what I love about it is, you know, people are never going to be always happy. No matter what industry you're in, it's never going to be just all rainbows. But the nice thing about this industry in particular is that people are honest. And so you'll have good candid conversations with them. And it allows you to continue to move forward as a unit, not as two separate parties. And I think that that's extremely, extremely beneficial.
Amen.
We have the best people in the industry. So not landscape hub, but just, you know, people, you know, out there comparatively. So,
oh, I was thinking landscape hub was the, yeah, no, the other people are great too.
We got some good ones. We got some okay ones. I'm on the screen with them now.
Well, Kyle, I don't want to keep you too long here today, but we want to, you know, for all our listeners that are out there, whether you're a supplier within our group or whether you're a contractor that digs into Landscape Hub or you're listening to From the Field, we want to, Kyle, can you tell just our folks out there, what's the easiest way for them to find you guys, to look you up, and how can they engage with you?
Sure. Yeah. The easiest way to find us is just through our website, just farmerlawpc.com, farmerlawpc.com. You can also email us at info@farmerlawpc.com. Our website's particularly nice because you can go on there and watch a bunch of videos and webinars. We got all kinds of content on there, and I think people need to really start utilizing it more. But that's the best way to get a hold of us.
Okay, great. Joe, did you have any other questions for Kyle this morning?
No, it's been good. I mean, that's, as I said, as we mentioned earlier, labor is always a hot topic. We get questioned all the time too, you know, about it, you know, what's working well for other folks. That's the, you know, just kind of joy of Will and I's position, you know, kind of helicopter view in a marketplace, you know, working with everyone across the board, buyers and suppliers. And this has been a common topic. So when, you know, Will reached out and got this going, I was pretty excited because it's nice to share this with folks. So we all are trying to do a common good. Especially, you know, in our industry, and having folks like you to help, you know, provide the essential tools they need to, you know, make hay at the end of the day. It's awesome. This has been great. You're awesome. I want to do an episode too, because I know there's going to be more probably questions from people listening to this podcast. Be like, can you talk about that? So I think we definitely need to get that on the books for probably after trade show season. But yeah, I think it'd be awesome to do a follow-up episode with you.
Yeah, I'd love to do a follow-up episode, but yeah, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come on here and meet and talk with you guys, and I look forward to doing it again.
Cool. Great. I think Joe's right. Like, you know, once folks kind of hear this and hear about our conversation, we'd love to kind of even just pull our buyer groups and just everyone that's out there, any like hot questions that they might have for you, so we could definitely look for an episode too. No worries.
Yeah. All right. Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Kyle. Appreciate you. Have a great day. And I'm Will Haverkamp.
I'm Joe Jurisic.
And thanks for listening, folks.
I appreciate it, y'all.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Take care. Thanks, y'all.